Yeah.
When this old world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face, I climb way up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, noted tallest woman in all of Pittsburgh, Amanda Waltz. We also...
Thank you, Brian.
That's her laughter. We also have winner of Stash Fest 2016 in the Dallas area, and that is Bill Graham.
Woo!
Yeah.
Ask me about my mustache.
The Golden Mustache Award. Today on the show, we will be talking about High Rise, the newest film from director Ben Wheatley. Film stars Tom Hiddleston and Jeremy Irons. Before we get into that, let us go through the usual housekeeping stuff. You can find us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. You can find us on Facebook. Search for The Film Stage Show. You can find us at thefilmstage.com, where you can leave comments on the pages that these episodes are posted on. And you can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. Also, feel free to give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. We always love that crap. And we will read it aloud on this show, good or bad. So feel free to make it as crazy and profane as you need.
Especially if it's bad, we'll read it.
Yeah.
Well, not
oh
really.
My God. And then we'll viciously make fun of you. All right. Yeah, that's kind of it. I will say before we started, I wanted to give a little shout out to another movie first. My wife and I went and saw Miles Ahead.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good?
That is it's not a biopic.
It's, oh, really?
No, cuz the entire plot is made up. Like the biographical facts that you kind of view within that plot are real. But the plot itself, it basically, Don Cheadle wrote, directed, and stars in this movie as Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And he is being interviewed by Ewan McGregor. So that this whole situation with Ewan McGregor's journalist character and a missing session tape, none of it's real, apparently.
Yeah.
But, you know, the flashbacks to his relationship with his wife and everything are real. So it's an interesting movie, really well acted. Well directed, cleverly edited. Not sure how I feel about the very, 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 very ending, but everything getting there is super great. Like, I loved it. I'm just not sure what to make of, like, the literal last scene that feels somewhat divorced from the narrative anyway. So I highly recommend, if it's playing near you, you should go check it out.
I was going to say, because I haven't
at
heard
the
a
last
lot.
5 minutes.
No, I mean, watch it all the way to the end, Bill. But
okay.
I would love it if one of our wonderful listeners could watch it all the way to the end and then just let me know what they think is going on and if they think it's successful.
Interesting. Okay.
Indeed. So there's a little mystery for the ladies and gentlemen at home to play along to.
Ooh, spine tingling.
A spine tingling mystery.
A whodunit.
Yes, absolutely. That is it, though. I don't have any other marriages to announce this week, so we can jump right in.
Bill, are you still single, or did you?
No, the mustache rides free, but
all right.
I did have two of my best friends get engaged yesterday, so
aww.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, jeez.
I went
happens
to a party.
All at once, dude. It really does.
I went to a party where I was going to say lifelong. I've only known her for like 9 years, but a really close female friend of mine let slip that after years of saying she'd never get married, she's thinking about it. She feels like she's up for it with the new guy she's dating, and I've been friends with him just as long, and I couldn't be happier. So
aww.
To that drunken admission, I say Godspeed. Make that happen.
Yeah.
It's enough of wedding talk. let's get on to our review.
If he listens to this podcast, it's going to be really weird.
I don't think he does, but I'm pretty sure she does, and I'm looking forward to an angry text message.
She's going to be like, Brian, why'd you say that?
Holy God.
That's Amanda. A terrible way to...
No, he's like,
almost
oh,
as bad
that's
as your
very
Johnny
accurate.
Depp impression.
Oh. That's a really mean impression of a woman.
Hello, Mrs. Delavan. All right. Well, let's get on. I mean, this is kind of my pre-review of High Rise. I'm perfectly fine making fun of our various social partners rather than talking about High Rise, but we should probably get into it.
We should probably, yeah.
Yeah, so High Rise, an adaptation of the J.G. Ballard novel. Tom Hiddleston plays a doctor who moves into a futuristic-ish high-rise in the 70s, and it's a self-contained environment, has everything a person could possibly need. There's really no reason to ever leave, even when the power goes out and social chaos erupts. So this is the trailer.
For all its inconveniences, Lang was satisfied with life in the high-rise, ready to move forward and explore life. How exactly? He had not yet decided.
I'm so sorry.
I'll survive.
I thought you were empty.
I just moved in.
You're an excellent specimen. Why don't you come up later and have a drink?
You don't know how things work around here, do you?
I'm a fast learner.
So that is the trailer for High Rise, as we said, the newest film from director Ben Wheatley, who has previously made Kill List and A Field in England, amongst other films.
Mm-hmm. Sightseers is quite good, I think.
I've heard great things about this director. This is the first film I've seen from him.
Really?
Which, yeah, I don't know how that happened. One of those
not a good
just...
introduction, I don't think.
We'll get into it, but it's...
We'll get into it.
It's funny because I will start out by saying that I think this film is a failure, but aesthetically, I'm on board.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Like, so as far as direction goes, it's fine. I just feel like narrative and perhaps editing.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it. Amanda... You've been mumbling disheartedly since you got on Skype. Why don't you let us know what you thought of High Rise?
I have been looking forward to this movie since it was announced. I've been very excited about it, especially because I very much like Ben Wheatley's previous films. Well, Field of England, not so much, but I love Kill List. Sightseers is surprisingly funny and dark, and just it's so odd to me that going into this film, just how incomprehensible it is. And if anyone knows, I don't know, you guys have never read the novel.
No, this movie makes me want to, though.
Right. Well, I will tell you this. So I watched this movie in a high rise, weirdly enough. One of the only high rises in Pittsburgh that was built and was probably very much hated when it was built. And that's why they didn't build anymore. And it is an eyesore. But it's also fascinating because it is just so like it's almost like going into a museum because it just looks like nothing like nobody builds. Like these kinds of structures anymore because they're just so dated and ridiculous. Like you go into it's like a secured building and you go into the foyer and there's classical music pumped into it 24/7 and there's plastic plants lying around. It is amazing. And I was watching it with a friend and he had read the novel and after the movie, he started telling me what was missing from the film, and it makes me feel like I've been cheated because there is so much, much more insane, disturbing, just off the wall stuff that happens, like much more explicit stuff that happens in the novel that is just so not present. Like this is definitely a sterilized take on the novel. But just from what I guess there's like cannibal rapists in the novel. It gets very dark.
But
yeah, it's almost like
made a difference to this movie, except to make it more shocking rather than just boring.
Well, it would have at least, because the way he describes it, it almost sounds like the road in an apartment building.
Right.
Kind of what it sounds like.
People kept saying that this was like, what's the movie? Snowpiercer, but in a building, which is like 100% wrong. It's a lot closer to Blindness.
Yeah.
Has anyone saw Blindness? I'm one of three people on Earth that likes Blindness.
I read the book.
The book? Yeah, okay, so you get it. You feel me.
The book's supposed to be very excellent.
The book is really good. The movie is a good adaptation of what seems like an unfilmable novel. We didn't have that on our list for the film stage, did we?
For the unfilmable novels? That Rafi did? Yeah. That would be... Well, I actually, weirdly, just to get off topic, I actually recommended Beloved for that list, and I'm surprised it wasn't on there. The unfilmable novels.
For anyone who's interested... about what we're
talking
about.
It's a good list, though.
The film stage has a list of unfilmable novels that they tried to film anyway, and we talk about how successful they are. I did not think of Blindness. That's a problem that I'm only now realizing.
Well, because my husband's reading Beloved right now, and I remembered that movie, trying to watch that movie as a kid, and I was like, oh, that should totally go on that list, but it was too late. But anyway, yeah, this... I was trying to articulate, because there are things about this movie... that I like, that I did enjoy. The performances, I mean, the people in this movie are giving it their all. James Purefoy, I think, is... I love him. Have you guys ever seen Solomon Kane?
No.
It is a terrible...
I did an interview with the director of that movie, but yeah, I've definitely seen it. And
it's not a great movie. It's like a Uwe Boll type fantasy movie.
Yeah.
But James Purefoy just... brings it, and he brings it in this movie as this guy named Pangborn who just kind of sucks on a pipe the entire time. I don't really know what he does.
Everyone in this movie is super weird, and they're all really on board, and
they're committed.
It makes it worse that it's not a better movie,
because
It's weird because Luke Evans is usually the sore thumb sticking out throughout an entire movie, and he actually blends into this movie.
He is
don't even realize he's over the top.
Well, he's actually, I think he is very much, I think he is like the spirit of this movie, like brought to life. But it's almost like he is... he doesn't mesh with the rest of the movie, though, because the rest of the movie isn't trying as hard as he is. But he's fantastic. He's like this disgusting, just like virile, just animal of a man. And like then you have Tom Hiddleston, who's so refined and so emotionally repressed that he's sort of he's the exact opposite of Evan's character. But then... I was trying to figure out what it was about this movie that bothered me the most. And I read a bunch of reviews just to sort of, I couldn't quite articulate what it was. And I read this review on Collider that said that this movie is more concerned with making a statement than it is with telling a story. And I would say that that's pretty much my biggest problem, because like, you don't get a sense of time or like, character relationships, or even like who the characters are or like how they relate to each other. Like there was a long period where I was like, I forgot that Elizabeth Moss's character and Luke Evans' character were husband and wife, because
they do that like swinging 70s thing where it's like everyone's husband and wife, or like, but that makes it super difficult,
right?
But I think that's a point that the movie's making.
I think it is,
because but the fact that I just think that, and I can't defend it because that's what it was doing, is a real issue for me.
But I think it's like that lack of... I think it would be more resonant if you remembered that they were married.
Like, yeah, probably.
You don't. And it's just...
like this, in a movie like this, you would think that when it's all about societal breakdown, you need society to exist, to break down. And we come into this in the middle of this, like, late period decadence.
Right.
And everything is just removed from temporal reality enough that you might think that that's just how the world is for these people.
Right.
And, like,
this is basically Rome on the brink.
It's almost like being in a casino or something. Like, you just have no sense of time.
But the issue for me for this movie is that it's about how this high-rise is like a self-contained community.
Right.
And so people kind of abandon the outside world, but we never really see anyone in the outside world anyway.
Well, Tom Hiddleston leaves for work.
Like, now
so we
and
see
then.
Him at work, but that's about
but
it.
His work involves cutting the faces off of cadavers.
Heads.
Which I don't know if that's a thing that people used to do. So again, I was just like, is this just the weird reality that we're living in?
I think the problem too is...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the problem too is I appreciate the idea of, because I think the way that this, the trailer sets it up is it goes from everything is working as it should, you know, all the classes are broken up, but everything is in this order, and then the power goes out and then all hell breaks loose. It is supposed to be a more gradual breakdown where, oh, the power keeps going out and the upper floors are saying, oh, the poor people don't need electricity. The poor people at the bottom of the building don't need electricity as much as we do. And so that's what kind of starts this, you know, this sort of like de-evolution into barbarism. But like, it felt gradual, and yet it didn't feel gradual, because it was like, it went from like the lights were flickering, like the power never went really like went out.
No, there's always lights on somewhere, like in the hallway.
And then, like, it went from, like, oh, the power is going out, and then you see one confrontation between some of the people on the upper floors and this sort of, like, middle-class people where Luke Evans and Elizabeth Moss sort of are from the, like, middle floors. And, like, Luke Evans is fighting with the upper-class people about the electricity situation. And then it goes from that to, oh, there's just trash everywhere and animals are wandering around. And I'm like, when did this happen? Like,
you know, it seemed like everyone was just, and maybe this is the point that the movie's making, but
maybe.
It's difficult to know, because it seems like everyone was just waiting for their chance to become blood-soaked orgy fiends.
Yeah.
I just, this movie makes me want to read the book, because this is an interesting idea that is totally underserved in this film.
It's and so underserved.
It happens so quickly and stays there so long that it becomes banal and boring for like the last hour of the film.
Yeah, it is. It is just so disconnected and so, you know, I was talking to someone about the film earlier and they said it feels like two movies because you have like the first part. And I think the first part, like you said, Brian, aesthetically, this movie is amazing. I mean, the costume design, the way the production design.
Like these weird apartments with like high ceilings and like
almost like German expressionist,
like
angles.
Brutalist concrete angles that look like they're made of corduroy. I mean, it's like cool, and I'm down, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to see some shit go down in this weird, you know,
like sterile environment. Yeah,
and then it doesn't work. Like, Snowpiercer did such a good job setting up.
Right.
The strife that when Chris Evans, you know, runs up to that gun and pulls the trigger and says, you know, they have no bullets. I'm just like, yeah, fucking kill him. And in this movie, I'm like, people didn't seem to talk at all. And there's never a point where like a cadre of the rich get together and say, let's fuck over the poor.
Well, I was also very confused as to who the poor was, because I thought Elizabeth Moss and Luke Evans were among the like poorer
they
class that lived at the bottom,
poor.
But they're like the middle class. So I'm like, well, who are the poor people?
Yeah, man. The poor people throw bomb-ass parties. That's what you got to know.
That's true. They do.
The poor in this film are like, they are just middle class. Like, so there is no poor in this world.
Unless it's like the service class.
You know what
because
else?
I think it's saying like the service class lives at the bottom, which are the people who run the market,
like the grocery store and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I maybe,
you know, there's no poor people in this movie, and I'm not okay. This is a really
no. There's a poor person. He's
who?
That he's the one that gets. He's driving the Mini, and is it Luke Evans? I can't remember. Someone jacks his spot.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I'm just making fun of that guy because he's a very large man in a very small car.
I don't want it to sound like I'm equating these two populations at all. I'm just saying this, and they're not connected. There's no poor people in this society, and there are also 100% no minorities.
No, not at all.
This is a lily white movie. It's all about class warfare and very boldly skirts any question of race or nationality.
And that is something that Wheatley had to talk about in an interview. I don't know if it was the interview on our site or if it was another one that I read where somebody very pointedly asked him, so why are they? And he's like, oh, because, you know, they wouldn't be allowed to live in this building.
Jesus.
See, that's cool. That's another idea that I like, but that's not in the text. And it's not even like someone says, oh, well, we've tried our best to keep this place as homogeneously, you know, heterogeneous as possible.
It is interesting because
I don't know how people get these apartments.
Doesn't Sienna Miller mention that Lang had a very interesting application?
Oh, she called it Byronic.
Yeah.
But that's, I don't. Like, people but seem I was, to want I was, to be in this place, but I don't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also because they try to set up, you know, Tom Hiddleston is haunted by the death of his sister, and he has, that's the only thing decorating his apartment is him, this photo of him and his sister. But,
yeah, no, that comes to nothing.
Really comes up.
Another thing that, well, like, literally everything in this movie comes to nothing. I mean, Jeremy Irons doing a bang up job in this film.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, he's like, you know, my car when I was in it was run over by a concrete mixing truck. So I guess you could say I'm the architect of my own disability. And it was like, that's a hilarious line. And there's a lot of stuff. You doing all right?
It's just so weird.
That's the thing. There's so many cool things like that in this movie where it's like, he's saying it, he knows it's a line, he delivers the line perfectly.
Right.
And it's just like, okay, I'm down for this. Keep up this weirdness, man. But when it comes time to get down to a little bit of like social realism, Wheatley's thesis seems to be, if the lights flicker, people gonna go nuts. And yeah, it's hard to deal with that.
And it also feels like it's because obviously this is set in the 70s, so they are cut off from the outside world, but they have phones and they have, you know, it's not like the world outside has turned to shit. Like, they can contact the police.
I don't know because they do show the outside at some points and
it looks fine.
No.
Well, it looks empty.
Yeah, it looks like a desert.
But that's because, I don't know if, it just feels like they took over, like, an old seaport. Like, I don't think that they're, like, in Trafalgar Square and, like, everyone is gone. I feel like they just built this thing on the outskirts.
I think it's supposed to be suburban. I think it's supposed to be, like, oh, they're sort of separate
sound
of from, yeah, they're sort of separate from the major, like, you know, urban area. But and also, like, the idea that it's like supposed, it's one of like five buildings. I don't know.
I don't know. Amanda and I have kind of colonized this conversation. Bill,
please,
why don't you jump in and just give us your thoughts?
So, I mean, I gotta agree with y'all.
I think aesthetically.
Yeah, aesthetically, the film is, and to be honest with you, I was super down with the first 30, 40, 45 minutes of it.
Yeah.
I remember watching it and just being like, all right, I'm down with this. Like I'm strapped in, I'm ready. Like, let's get this shit going. And it just doesn't go where you kind of want it to. Although it does, it's kind of like what you're saying, Brian. It goes there, but it doesn't go there the way you want it to. And so,
not even the way you want it to, but the way it should go.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
It's like it's like if you were just driving across the country and you're like, sure, I want to get to California. I'm assuming that you're driving from the East Coast. Sure, I want to get to California. But I'm also looking forward to seeing, like, all the sights and sounds in between how this beautiful country of ours changes. And then you fall asleep and wake up in California and you're like, yeah, I guess it's great we got here, but I've been looking forward to all the stuff in the middle.
And your friends are showing you, like, selfies that they took with you and you're asleep.
While you were in your fugue state.
Yeah, while you're just, like, dead asleep.
While
and you're
you
just
slept
like,
for the 48 hours it takes to drive across America.
Hey, man.
The metaphor breaks down a little there. But then again, so does the metaphor in this movie. So it works.
Anyway, go ahead.
I literally finished this movie like 2 hours ago. So when I say I remember, it's still fresh in my mind. But it's definitely like aesthetically, I think this film just has so much going for it. Mm-hmm. And Tom Hiddleston he's such an interesting character to watch throughout this film because he's so calm. And he's so repressed that everything that happens in and around him is almost highlighted because he's in that situation. So when crazy things happen, when people pass out during a medical examination and, you know, he gives them the bad news and, you know, he's stoic faced throughout. And it's interesting to kind of watch his interaction with this world. I don't know. It's interesting because Sienna Miller, for me, is a very interesting character throughout this film. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even realize it was Sienna Miller.
Yeah,
and
I had the feeling it might be.
She's such an interesting actress because everything I see her in, I'm constantly like, who was that? Who was that? And then I read it's Sienna Miller. I'm like, how does this keep happening? Like, what is wrong with your face to the point where like I literally forget it the moment it's out of sight?
That's
and then
the best thing I've ever heard.
I don't. I just don't understand what's going on with her. she's a great
actress. She's a
beautiful
woman, but like she's
yeah. She like a lot of people call. Actresses and even like actors like chameleons and stuff like that. And I think she's the literal embodiment of that. Like,
oh wow.
Like she just blends into wherever she's in, you know, whatever movie she's in, and you're just like, who is that person? Like they're fascinating. And then you read at Sienna Miller, you're like, how does this keep happening? I don't understand.
I just want to follow you around for the rest of your life. As you continuously get flummoxed by Sienna Miller appearing in movies.
Like, it's almost like, it's almost like she just looks at the camera and goes like, shh, just like puts her finger to her lips and then like goes, just like disappears.
It might as well be. I've already talked about a little bit about my love for Luke Evans. I think... I will watch any movie that he's in from now on. Even I mean,
have
you know,
you seen
I'm
The Raven.
No, that's the movie that introduced him to me.
The Raven,
me too.
Oh,
wait,
my
the
God.
Edgar Allan Poe movie.
Yeah,
I kind of love that movie, obviously because it was written for Nicolas Cage, and instead they got John Cusack.
Oh, whoa!
Oh my God, I didn't
even
know that.
It's so obvious.
Now that you said that,
that's definitely true. Yeah.
That movie is. Also,
he was in like Dracula Untold. He was the bad guy in Fast and Furious 6.
Oh, what? Yeah. Oh, okay. I guess I got to catch up to that series now.
Damn,
he's so
right,
wonderful.
Yeah, but I don't know. You're so right, Amanda. When you were talking about him, because he's definitely very virile and just I'm a man. Throughout this entire
so
movie.
So much hair. It's because he's like the exact opposite from Tom Hiddleston, who's like a dolphin. He's completely hairless.
I was about to say he's like a triangle made of like a redwood. He's just got like broad shoulders and kind of like narrow waist, and then he's got just like the legs, and it like a boxer from 1910.
Gorgeous. He's a gorgeous man. I mean, I love Tom Hiddleston just because he's so...
I'm not talking about Tom Hiddleston. I'm talking about fucking Luke Evans.
Luke Evans is like a hairy beast. He's so gross. No, and it's
Tom Hiddleston
as a woman,
is like a broomstick with googly eyes on it.
He's like Beaker.
That's his body type. I mean, I would love to be a broomstick with googly eyes on it. I am, you know, I could shed a few pounds. I'm not belittling Tom Hiddleston. I'm just saying, when you want a reedy, intellectual looking guy, you go Tom Hiddleston. And when you want steelworker who bare knuckle boxes to make ends meet, you go Luke Evans.
Luke Evans is definitely the kind of guy that I look at and I'm like, I'm attracted to him, but like, I shouldn't be.
he's the dangerous guy, right?
Yeah.
He's the bad boy. Yeah, he's bad boy in literal form.
Although, to be fair, Tom Hiddleston's not the best option in this movie either, because he's so ineffective in so many ways.
I don't understand what they're saying about him. Like, is he just like, why? They never really explain why he doesn't take part. Like, then they say like, oh, he knows his place, and I'm just
because he's the narrator.
I was about to say, is he just so depressed that he can't get even into post-apocalyptic debauchery? It's like the friend who, like, they lose their girlfriend so they won't go to a party, except the party is the end of the world.
Well, I mean, we should talk a little bit about the way the film opens, and it's
that's true.
I mean, it's literally him in a button-down shirt and tie, and you're like. Wait, this doesn't look that bad. And then you're like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah,
this
it slowly bad. Walks you through the mounting horror.
And he's eating a dog.
I know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. he ends up eating a dog.
Well, no, he starts roasting that leg first scene.
Yeah.
And then the end of the movie, he says, you know, he'd finish the dog and oops, spoilers? I don't know. Doesn't matter.
It's the very first scene.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna assume he ate all the dog.
Because... you're not one to waste it. When you're living in a post-apocalyptic high-rise that you refuse to leave, we should say, this isn't like Snowpiercer or Blindness where people are, like, stuck somewhere. They just choose to remain.
Yeah, that's the weird thing, too, because it's... And I feel like it definitely doesn't really delve into
like the psychology of why you stay.
Right, because it's just like... And, like, there's even a part where somebody questions, like, well, why hasn't anyone called the police? Because that guy throws himself off the building... And they're just like, no, I'm surprised we didn't hear a siren. And I'm like, well, what happened to him? Has the cannibalism already started? Like,
well, you hear those seagulls. I mean, the seagulls
probably pecked away at his bones. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have literally no idea. There's a really interesting scene that I kind of liked when a guy's like, can you give me a lift to work? And Tom Hiddleston says, you know, they're standing in like this football field of a parking lot.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't seem to remember where I left my car. And the guy's like, well, I can't either. And then the next scene is Tom Hiddleston driving somewhere. And it's just like, okay, so I guess he found his car. But it would be so much more interesting if that was like the beginning of these people realizing that there is no outside world to them anymore. Like, I feel like you could shuffle even the things that exist currently in this movie and make a better movie.
It would be an interesting scene to have like Tom Hiddleston like walk around these cars and like pressing his like unlock button. Well, I guess you know, it's the 70s, maybe they didn't have that shit.
Yeah, just trying to lock all the cars.
Yeah, just like trying to fit it in and just okay, I guess this isn't my car, and realizing like, wait, like does anyone drive? And
And they just say like, oh, has anyone even been to work recently? And like, there's a slow breakdown where you could first isolate and then drive people to madness. But like, none of the things that are inciting incidents in this movie make sense as inciting incidents. It's as though a light bulb went out and I suddenly decided that it was Road Warrior time and I went and like tried to murder a neighbor.
That's like, exactly how what happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
but that's not how it works.
This film, I feel like Wheatley was very heavy on certain elements and themes that he wanted to play up. I mean, there's a shot. I guess it's kind of a pan shot of these peaches, and all of a sudden you see these nice, perfect little peaches, and then as it zoom or as it pans across, you start seeing some that have in the next box, you see some that have a little bit of mold. And then you see some that have a little bit more mold. And then you see some that are just covered in mold. And it's like a 15, 20 second shot. And you're like, I got it. Like,
yeah,
why,
and it's
but
like,
here's the thing. Why is, I don't why got it. Happening? Are all of those peaches existing next to each other, or is that to show the passage of time?
I don't know.
That cashier chick learns French.
Yep.
Yeah. So obviously, it's been a while. But
we start off post-apocalyptic, and then we get to the pre-apocalypse, and it says 3 months earlier. So I already know that 3 months have passed. So like, I don't understand. I don't understand a lot, but the thing is, there's like, I admire the craft to make this not great failure of a film, which is really weird to say.
And I understand.
I'm still not going to recommend it to people.
This was adapted by Amy Jump, who is Wheatley's longtime collaborator. Like, she's written all
They're
of his previous
too,
films.
They?
Are they? They might be.
Probably. I feel like I read that somewhere.
So I imagine that she had quite some challenge with adapting this, because it's like we said before, this is one of those books where people are just like, it's unfilmable. Like, you can't possibly turn this into a movie that will make sense.
Surprise.
But but I just feel like in order to make it into a movie, they lost so much of like what makes the book so memorable and so like, you know what I mean? It's just like they had to get rid of so much that like after hearing about it, I'm like, I want to see that. Like, yeah. I would like, mm-hmm. Why isn't that in this film? So I don't know if they're making it more accessible. It's just,
the thing is, you don't need like crazy amounts of violence and weirdness. You just need the breakdown to make sense.
Right. And
like, I don't need this movie plus violence. I need this movie plus understandable motivations. Otherwise, your entire metaphor breaks down. As a man who makes no less than 3 metaphors per podcast, I know something about metaphors.
I've got you at 2, I think.
I got the driving one.
Yeah.
And then
does the light bulb one count?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, let's count that one.
Let's do that one.
But yeah, I mean, did you guys want to just go into spoilers? Because I feel like we kind of have to. There's not a whole lot more.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time. We'll jump into spoilers real quick. So now, spoilers for High Rise. Here's a question. Why did he have sex with Elizabeth Moth?
I don't know.
Bill, did you?
I don't know, man.
Do you know why that happened or what it was supposed to mean? Because even if you can give me a meaning behind it, I'll take it.
Also, here's
she
the thing
nice
about...
him.
Okay.
Well, I think they kind of see his apartment as being like a safe haven, because his apartment hasn't really been infiltrated like the rest of the apartments. So that's, she goes to stay with him.
Something like that. She's like, you're the best.
Something.
There was a word. There was a word she used. You're the best something in the high rise.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Like a neutral
specimen.
Zone. No, it was like a neutral zone. It was like, you're the best.
Check.
Immunity in the
immunity. Eyes. Yeah, that's it.
But that doesn't mean anything to me.
It doesn't mean anything.
I don't understand this new society they've created.
Well, it's like, but the other thing about, so Elizabeth Moss, I think she's an amazing actress. In this movie, I swear to God, she's like 20 months pregnant. And
yeah, she's like, there's one shot where she lays down on the bed and I'm like, whoa, holy shit.
That is
yeah,
the
as
most
a person
fake...
whose wife is currently 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's too big. And then she says at the party when he first moves in at the end of the 3 months later thing, oh, this one is late. And then she doesn't have the baby until like everything has gone to hell. So
which
she
is
must
just
be like 11 months pregnant by that point.
Yeah, and it's just like, also, just in terms of her performance, that pregnancy belly is so fake and so big, and Moss is not acting pregnant. I mean, I'm like, girl, you
she's
gotta
not
lean
walking
into
around.
That.
No, she just like flops back on the bed, and you'd think that that would be an easy thing for a pregnant woman to do. It is not.
No. You don't flop anywhere when you're pregnant.
No, you very gently lay down, and then you go, and then you slowly lower yourself back. And then,
that's hilarious.
I can I was hear just my like, wife girl, you laughing gotta, downstairs. You... Apparently, I'm really nailing this.
Oh, boy. But it is like, yeah, and it's just like, so it's basically everybody's just fucking killing, and there's Jeremy Irons because has a wife who, by the way, the wife and the actress are like interchangeable.
Oh yeah, I had so much trouble figuring out who was who
because they're both like kind of strawberry red hair. I have no idea.
And they both were like probably pretty like okay, that this sounds mean. They were probably much more attractive 10 years ago.
Well, I think that's supposed to be the point. Like, yeah, they're these, like, washed up.
I'm not saying that to be an asshole. I'm saying that because that's the text of the film.
No, it is, definitely. And she has a horse that she keeps on the top. And there's a scene where they're running out of meat. So...
yeah, so they go kill the horse.
They gotta kill the horse. They don't show it. Which I was like, you can show that horse getting slaughtered.
I don't think they could afford to.
That was a beautiful horse, though.
Yeah, it was a really nice looking horse.
But I like there's a scene where I think was... so I guess... I think that is pretty like definitive of the film for me is where he and Jeremy Irons' character, who's this architect who also lives in the penthouse of the building, invites Hiddleston up for dinner. And by that time, Sienna Miller has been like raped into submission or something by like Luke Evans, or I don't know what the hell happened, but like,
yeah, he like captures her and then like he goes and she, I guess, goes to the top of the high rise. And I don't know. It's
for like protection. Yeah.
Society makes no sense.
So like she serves them dinner and Jeremy Irons is like, oh, steak, where did you get these? And she's like, where do you think? And he like pushes it away because he knows it's horse meat. And so he and Hiddleston are having this conversation. And I can't remember what he says, but then Sienna Miller leans down and just starts eating the horse meat just with her hand, like just picks it up and starts eating it. And I felt like it was this, moment where it's just saying like Hiddleston and like Irons are trying to deny like what's going on around them and trying to act as if everything's normal. Whereas like Hiddleston's starting to like lean into it.
And Sienna, you'd think that their relationship would be like Chris Evans and Ed Harris in Snowpiercer, but it's not. There's no factions. There's no strife. It's just people being weird all over.
And it's also just like, I think it's supposed to be Irons is supposed to be like the keeper of like the women and children basically like go live with him in the penthouse.
But there's never a moment where that becomes a thing.
But which actually most interestingly enough in the book, and I'm saying this is secondhand information. So if somebody has read the book and knows and thinks I'm full of shit, then by all means, please, you know, comment or something. But like apparently in the book, cause the ending, like Jeremy Irons' character gets killed by Luke Evans.
Yeah.
And then Hiddleston basically becomes top dog. And so all the women women and children sort of go and live with him. And I guess in the book, the reason for that is
as they do.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And what happens?
I
don't know if that's
kind
what
of
happens.
I guess it's, that's what I mean. Like it's like supposed to be in the book. They all go live with Hiddleston, but I guess the reason they do that is because he gets them all hooked on morphine.
Okay.
Yeah. So like they have to go to him. Yeah.
It's like an allegorical thing, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Like I mean like Evans shoots Irons dies, and then the women stab Evans, and then the movie just ends.
I mean, there's so many things in the movie where it's like these people trying to keep up. And I think really what this movie is about isn't so much like, I mean, it's British, so of course it's about like class warfare and like caste systems and all that garbage.
Oh, I mean, like there's a whole like 30 second speech by Margaret Thatcher that really underlines.
When that happened, I was like, oh, fuck you. Like at the end, I was like, please. But I think there's so many moments in the movie that's trying to sort of like, it's sort of this idea of when you imagine like the upper classes being very sophisticated, but it's sort of like this manufactured image of sophistication where even after like everything is breaking down, people are eating dog food, but as long as they're drinking champagne, like expensive champagne with the dog food, it's fine. It's still, you're still a refined, sophisticated person, which I guess but even then I'm like, this isn't working for me.
Yeah. That's pretty much, that's like a perfect way to end this. This isn't working for me. Any final thoughts, Bill, before we say goodbye?
Well, I thought it was really weird that the architect is, you meet him and you don't realize it's a big deal at first. And, you know, when you begin the film, Tom Hiddleston is just kind of invited up and you're like, who is this guy? Why is he so important? And then you're like, oh, he's the architect? Cool.
Yeah, I feel like no one building's gives a done, shit dude. About architects as much as TV shows and movies give a shit about architects.
Yeah. I mean, it's
I'm friends with many architects.
Building is done, dude. Like, why are you still here?
Well,
and
because
he's still
like,
working on something. Is it the other four buildings?
Well, I think they're already done, because isn't there a scene where Hiddleston walks out into the parking lot and there's that sort of like, there's that scene of him looking at all of the buildings surrounding him, and I was like, is this supposed to be like he figures out that the buildings are in the shape of a pentagram or something? Like, is there some other like supernatural thing going
well, like,
on?
The
what
guy
is going
said
on?
He wanted it to be like a hand that was upturned and the lake was in the palm and the fingers were the buildings. And
yeah.
And I guess I thought that the other buildings were still under construction, but then at the end it says, you know, Tom Hiddleston is doing a third person narration of his own life. And he says, you know, Lang would finish the dog and wait for other buildings to go crazy and for their occupants to come here. It's like, why would you think they would go there? They're in their own building, and you know now that no one leaves the building when they go crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. This movie's
a
mess.
And also, how are they going to find their car, man?
Yeah.
There's no cars in the...
I don't know.
Like, there's no cars in the end, in the parking lot at the end. This movie's a mess.
Yeah. Yep. So, an unfortunate misfire. I know that we've said that there are some interesting things in this film, but I don't believe that they warrant watching it.
Well, he has a film, is it Free Fire?
Sure.
It's his next movie with Brie Larson. It's her first big...
Oh, yeah.
Like, big role after Room.
Yeah, but it's also supposed to be like an action film, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a 70s, like almost sort of like, what's that called? Like Precinct 13. Kind of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Like that kind of. Well, I don't know. Just from what I've read.
Invasion.
Play. Yeah.
The
like,
poster says 3 crates of semi automatic rifles, 2 bags of money, 1 bullet away from freedom.
And like Army Hammer's in it too, which is.
Nice.
Yeah. It's got Cillian Murphy. Cillian Murphy.
Cillian?
Cillian.
Uh oh.
Charlton Copley.
Ooh.
And Noah Taylor.
Man.
Oh, no, Taylor's in it. Oh, good.
I'm looking forward to this director's next film. I will say that. And I will go back and look at his back catalog, which is a crazy thing to say for a movie I didn't enjoy as much as this one.
I will say Kill List. I think Kill List is very divisive for people.
I love
loved it. Oh,
yep. I adore that
loved
film.
It, I should stay away. That's a joke, obviously. We usually agree more than we disagree.
Yes. But when we disagree... Oh,
oh boy.
Boy.
Let's talk about Triple Nine.
No.
No, please.
No more bodies in trunks.
What about bodies crumpled onto roofs?
That's fine. That's
okay.
Fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all for today. Next week, we will be talking about the lobster.
Oh,
yeah.
God, I hope so.
I think
lobster.
So. Yes, the lobster. So next week, we'll be talking about the lobster. That is the newest film from... Okay, I don't know. How do you say that name?
Oh no.
It's like Yorgos...
it's Greek, isn't it?
I can't remember the last name.
It's
You have
Yorgos
the name in front of you, Brian.
Lanthimos? Lanthimos.
Lanthimos.
Yorgos Lanthimos. Sure, why not? And that stars Colin Farrell. And
we'll get
Rachel
it right
Weisz.
By the next... By
I'll
the next.
Figure it out. Yeah, I'll do some digging. There's bound to be a pronunciation guide somewhere. Between now and then, you can find us online. Again, find the Film Stage on Twitter at Film Stage Show, and on Facebook, just look for the Film Stage Bill Graham, where can we find you between now and then?
At MustacheCon 2016. Also at CableBFG on Twitter. And you can find me writing interviews and reviews, the film stage.
All right. Amanda Waltz.
Hello. Yes, you can find me. Sorry. Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Media Waltz. You can find me on Letterboxd, also Media Waltz. And you can also find my blog on WordPress, Steel Cinema.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, Letterboxd at Brian J. Rowan. And you can find my review for a whole bunch of films, including X-Men Apocalypse, on thefilmstage.com. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. Have a great time, and we will see you next week. I love you.